It's not dangerous if they issue bonds or issue stock. And when we real estate investors, you know, borrow to buy assets, we're doing it because those assets are going to pay us more than what we're borrowing. And as long as you stick to what you know and what you can control, I think you'll be well advised to learn about real estate and take the plunge.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I know you're going to love our guest today. Dave Holman of Katahdin Properties is here with us today. Dave, I know you've got just a ton of experience in real estate, and why don't you just tell us a little bit about your journey to real estate, and then we'll get into it from there.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing the show to educate people. I think it's awesome. So I'm from Maine originally, grew up kind of rural, middle class, got the opportunity to go to college in the Midwest, which to me was like downtown Manhattan, and enjoyed that a lot. Thought about maybe becoming like an architect or something after college. I had learned about green building in some classes there, you know, building green roofs, all kinds of neat, you know, technology to make buildings and the built environment more efficient. Life took me down to Bolivia for the next 4 years, where my then girlfriend, now wife, and I were starting a chain of bookstores and camping stores together in Bolivia. So that kind of gave me the entrepreneurial bug under very challenging circumstances. So, you know, US is a piece of cake after, you know, doing business in a developing economy. Although in some ways it's harder. There's pros and cons to both. So after that, I went back to graduate school, got my MBA, still nothing really to do with real estate, went into nonprofit development, fundraising, leadership for the next like 9 years, and had started doing real estate on the side. First as a passive investor with my college friend's syndication, which I knew nothing about and slowly learned about from their quarterly reports. And then eventually, you know, partnered with family because I didn't have a lot of capital of my own to buy a single family house as an investment, did another, and then I really launched into it. Ironically, when my wife got pregnant with our first child, I was like, I need to step up my game. You know, my nonprofit salary is not going to, you know, let us live a full life, let's say. And so just dove into learning about real estate investing. It just struck me as interesting and as a way that I could improve the world around me and, you know, gain resources for my family as well. And that was kind of a win-win that's taken me to where I am today, where I co-own Katahdin Property Management. We've got about 130 units under management, most of which I co-own. I'm a commercial broker in Maine, so I help other people, you know, buy and sell investment property and commercial property mostly. And then I sponsor syndications. So we've done 4 and we're planning 2 more right now. So exciting stuff.
Well, that is an amazing story, Dave. I know we're going to have a second show to talk about a bunch of stuff. But for now, I would love to talk more about, you know, we talked before the show about cash out refis versus passive income. And, you know, this show is called Passive Income MBA. Obviously, there's more to real estate than just that. Tell us a little bit about kind of your thoughts on the two and how they fit into your portfolio.
Sure. So I think most of the low-hanging fruit resources that, you know, early stage real estate investors who maybe haven't done any deals yet get is that you need to generate cash flow and passive income. And that's the way to kind of escape the rat race and find freedom. And that's totally true. It's a great thing to pursue. I describe it as a get-rich-slow scheme that if you start working away at it, you know, in like 10 years, maybe 5, if you're very ambitious and quick, you can kind of succeed. And it's a very rare case that you'll get enough passive income if you didn't start out with money, you know, to be able to change your life overnight in a year or two. But what can really change your life is this taboo subject that real estate investors always shy away from called appreciation. You know, it's often described as the icing on the cake. However, I've kind of discovered that, like, no, it's most of the cake, actually. It's much bigger and more profound and more powerful than the passive income for a couple of reasons. You know, one is in the very word. The passive income is income, and that is taxed, albeit, you know, at capital gains rates, perhaps, albeit in ways that you can offset, you know, through passive losses. But in general, you know, if you earn a couple hundred thousand dollars of passive income, I mean, you may have to pay a significant tax bill on that. Whereas if you earn a couple hundred thousand from a cash out refinance of a property that appreciated in value over time because you chose a good location, a mismanaged property that you began managing correctly, you made aesthetic improvements to, you know, and changed the renter base, and you drove NOI, net operating income, in that property and got it appraised for twice what you paid for it a few years ago, the sort of windfall you get from that, first of all, probably represents 10 or 20 years of passive income all in one go in your first refinance, if you've done this well, or luckily. And number two is that it's just not taxed. You know, the only tax that is incurred upon it, you could say, is the interest that you'll be paying on this larger loan. And, you know, if your passive income was $1,000 a month on this property, maybe it'll go down to $750 or $500 because you're paying a higher, you know, debt burden on it. But the windfall you get from that and the freedom it gives you to reinvest in other projects, to diversify, and to live your life, to do whatever you want with, is really profound. And I think it's something that we as real estate investors and as passive income seekers either ignore, or we kind of poo-poo it as that's for dumb people who are gambling. You know, and it's true that you should never, in my opinion, buy a property to just speculate on an appreciation if it doesn't cash flow. That is dangerous. You know, you can get burned. That's only for experts. But if you buy something that cash flows, you know, appreciation can be the biggest, you know, arrow in your quiver down the road, especially if you manage it, you know, with that in mind. You know, the investments you make in the property can really come back and pay off in the end.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think like one key difference is the difference between appreciation and forced appreciation, right? So we're often, you know, I think there's a narrative that we're not trying to rely on market appreciation, although obviously that's been good for most markets recently. But forced appreciation, where, you know, all the things you're talking about, driving NOI, reducing expenses, increasing income, making the property nicer, having stickier tenant base, all that stuff, it forces the appreciation, right? And so I love what you're saying about the cash out refi. Can you explain for just the listeners who are maybe newer to this concept, just like kind of break it down, exactly what is the cash out refi? And, you know, it's tax-free. Yeah. Why is it tax-free compared to the other income, et cetera?
Right. That's a great question. And so a cash out refi or refinance is simply going to a bank, just as if you're going to buy a property for the first time and taking out a loan, except that you've not only got the down payment you put into the property originally, but you've built up equity in that property above and beyond your, let's call it 20% down payment that you put in originally. And you can tap that equity just like when you sell the property. You're tapping that equity, you're pulling out that money to do with what you will. You know, massive difference though, and the beauty of the cash out refi strategy as opposed to the 1031 strategy, which I'm actually going to throw some cool water on in this talk, is that you get to keep the property. And I think people they're too quick to want to trade up and constantly trade and constantly churn. You generate, you know, broker fees, people like me who render a great service, but we charge, you know, 5-6% for that service. We have taxes, you have attorney fees, you know, which you have to some degree with any transaction. To the cash out refi, you'll pay some attorney fees too, but they're not significant. You know, they're maybe 1% as opposed to the 5 or 6 of, you know, the broker alone in a sale scenario. And then, you know, to me, the worst thing about the 1031 exchange that people don't think about is you have to start from zero with a brand new property that you don't know the tenants in, you don't know how to manage, you might not know the area, you might have bought wrong, you might have overpaid for it because you felt pressure to move your money out in 90 days. And, you know, 1031 money is often kind of dumb money in real estate because a gun is to your head to do it before you incur tax penalties. And people don't realize that, you know, all a sale really is tapping 100% of the equity that you have in your property. A cash out refi taps 80%. but it does so in a much gentler and more sustainable way. And it's frankly a lot easier for you, the owner, to just keep the property you have and the tenants you have and the bank account and, you know, all the different systems and vendors and contractors that are already in place than to, you know, sell that, start from scratch. The other reason I fell on this strategy is because, you know, in podcast, I heard these wonderful, experienced, older investors, and they all had one regret in common. You know what that regret was? It was selling a property. And they would look back on these properties they had sold 5 or 10 years ago and be like, oh, but it'd be worth 10 times that now. Oh, I sold it back then for peanuts and now it's worth so much more. And they pretend to be happy about it, or some of them are, I guess. But, you know, I would only say sell a property if there are real good reasons to do so, such as not being comfortable with the location, your life just being too stressful and feeling bad, you know, when you're dealing with that property. I mean, those would be reasons to consider selling to me. Economically speaking, though, I like buy and hold. You know, real estate historically has appreciated 6% on a national average. I mean, some people might tell you 3, whatever it is, but I will tell you one thing, it's about double, you know, the CPI number, the inflation number. So real estate inflates probably closer to what I consider real inflation to be. So you get that almost automatically, you know, depending on where you are. If you bought in Detroit or in a very rural area that continued depopulating, you know, you may not fare so well, but it's not too hard to find areas that are going to be pretty stable for a pretty long time because they're well diversified and ride that long-term trend. And if you can force some appreciation on top of that, you really get a powerful force acting on your behalf that has nothing to do with cash flow that you're generating from the property, but everything to do with what you can pull out of it later in a tax-free way. Because when you take out a loan, if I loan you $100, Suja, to go and use for something, you don't pay income taxes on my $100 loan because you didn't earn it. You have to pay it back. And the same is true with the cash out refi. We don't pay taxes on those because we're borrowing against an asset. You know, when you get a loan on your house, you're not earning all that money as income. You have to pay it back. So that's why I like it. It's a strategy that I don't think is ever going to significantly change until you get into like wealth taxes, which is a whole nother question. But that's not really done, you know, anywhere significantly in the world that I'm aware of. And I don't think it will gain a lot of traction, at least for the non-billionaires among us.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for breaking all of that down. And, you know, you've clearly built up your portfolio piece by piece, starting with single family homes. And now you've got like, you know, something like 130 doors or something like that. Can you tell us, because we talked a little bit about your investing strategy and how you're leveraging your cash out refis and what you're doing with that, just so that folks can kind of get an understanding of how money moves and how to leverage your money in the best way possible and make it work for you.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Right. That's a great question. So I'd heard a lot about these whole life insurance policies on different podcasts. And if you haven't heard about those, you know, Google it, listen to Suja's podcast when this is talked about either now or in the future. And it's a really interesting strategy where you would fund a whole life policy and start paying into it. So let's say you build up a value of $100,000 in your policy because you've put in an initial payment and then made monthly payments to it, you can borrow against that. So the policy keeps increasing in value because MassMutual, the mutual life insurance companies, guarantee you, I think it's a 4% annual return. And some years they do even better than that and give you a bigger return because you're a member and they've invested on your behalf your money. And so your money's growing tax-free in this, you know, life insurance plan account, but you can borrow against it, you know, which you can't do with your IRA or your 401k account too easily. You can borrow against that. And so you're really just owing yourself money, but you now have, you know, 50,000 there, you might have 40,000 $10,000 that you've borrowed out of it, you kind of have $90,000. It's working in two places now at once, and you can reinvest that $40,000 in something that just earns you a better return than the interest rate you're paying yourself on that money. And so that's basically the strategy I wanted to pursue, but I've never loved insurance in general. It's not like a sexy topic, and it's frankly somewhat over my head sometimes when you get really into the weeds of it. And as a guarantor of loans, I know the bank, you know, is looking at me, and I've never had that much in the way of liquid assets. I've always been putting my money to work or just needing to spend it on bills pretty quickly after earning it. So what I wanted to do was keep my capital, you know, intact that I've earned and that I'm accumulating with cash out refinances, but keep it intact in a liquid way so that I can use it as, you know, a guarantee for future syndications and investments. So I encountered this strategy that very few people that I know use, where you can have a brokerage account, because I've done stock investing for, you know, most of my life, and I'm good enough at it that I don't lose money, and I often do better than the S&P. So, you know, I'm going to invest, or I am investing, you know, this money in a brokerage account, and then borrowing against it, just like you would in the life insurance account, except that I think I'm going to get better than 4% annual returns on, you know, my basket of different cryptocurrencies, tech stocks, and commodities. And I control it. If I needed to sell some, I actually could, and I could use that money. You know, the bank that's giving me the line of credit, you know, is up to 70% loan to value LTV, but I'm not going to go near that except for very short-term, you know, transactions. Just because if the market goes down, if Bitcoin gets regulated out of existence and some of my bets don't pay off, I don't want to be having a margin call, you know, where I would need to, again, like refinance another property before I'm ready, or God forbid, sell one, or you know, do something extreme like that. So trying to be a bit conservative now that I've got a little bit of wealth to preserve, but still doing it in a way that will allow it to grow in two places at once. Because, you know, let's say I invest $500,000 in the stock market, I might borrow $300,000 against that over the course of a couple years and sprinkle that into all kinds of different investments, you know, 20 here, 50 there, 20 here, 10 there, into, you know, new properties that I can buy, mostly in real estate, but maybe in, you know, some angel investments or other things to kind of stay diversified. So that's my strategy for now. Talk to me in 5 or 10 years. I might have different opinions, but there I am.
Yeah, it sounds like you're one of the only people you know that's pursuing that, which is, and you called it a pledge account. Is that right?
Yeah, different institutions call them different things. At Fidelity, it's called a pledged asset account. So, you know, it's similar to a margin trading account, but they generally explicitly forbid you using the proceeds to buy stock. Because again, stock investing is inherently risky. Like your investment can go down to zero, whereas real estate investing and other investing is actually less risky, in my opinion, because it's insured. It's not very likely that your single family home anywhere in the country, even Detroit, is going to go to zero. Detroit's actually been doing great right now. I think it's a renaissance. Like there's a whole different story, you know, going on there than what we might think. But, you know, in the long run, I want to be well diversified, because my eggs have been entirely in the real estate basket. I've gone completely all in on real estate, and that's a bet that's paying off wonderfully right now. You know, anyone that's done that over the past 10 years, you know, if you haven't done well, you know, like call a helpline, because things have been appreciating rapidly. And, you know, anyone who's bought into real estate, if you've just held it, you should be up pretty significantly right now if you did it in the past 10 years. And even if you bought in the top of the market in 06, we're well above those times now. Even those that have held out for the long run, I think it's paying off.
Yeah. Before touching back on what you just most recently said, I want to just go back to the pledged asset account. And so is that something that you at Fidelity, can you do that with like your IRA, or is it just like, is there specific type of accounts that you can do that with?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you'd have to check, you know, with each institution differently.
Sure.
My understanding is you can't borrow against IRA accounts, but I'm not a retirement advisor. I'm not a tax advisor. I really don't know. You can lend out of them. And that's actually a really good activity to do out of tax sheltered account, especially if it's a Roth IRA where your gains won't be taxed. So people that can do high tax activities out of a Roth IRA, like flipping, you know, that is a great strategy, I think, because, you know, flipping is like a terrible tax strategy in that you're going to pay through the nose of active income. You haven't held this for a year. You know, you're going to, if you're successful, you'll be in a very high tax bracket. Let's put it that way. And so if you can be flipping using your IRA account, you know, all those gains, not not happening. You know, you're not paying that same tax. Similarly, you know, thing with private lending, you know, that's going to be taxed at you know, pretty high rates, the, you know, income you get from it. But if you can do it out of a retirement account, you know, there's some benefit there. So I'm not 100% anti-retirement accounts, but I've decided I haven't been funding mine at all, you know, for the past couple of years, ever since my light bulbs kind of turned on. I'm like, wait a minute, you know, even all these retirement accounts, they're not tax-free. What they're really just saying is with a Roth IRA, you pay full taxes today, but then you don't have to pay them tomorrow. And that might hurt today, but at least tomorrow you won't have to pay them. With a traditional IRA, you don't have to pay them today, but you do have to pay them tomorrow, which could be very dangerous because tomorrow's tax rate could be double what today's is. You know, so that's really gambling, in my opinion. I mean, traditional in retirement investing, you're taking a huge gamble that the whole world isn't going to become more like Europe and Scandinavia and have 50, 60, 70%, you know, marginal tax rates. I think we are heading in that direction. I think there's actually some reasons why that might be a good thing, but whether it is or not, I think it's not so certain that that's a good strategy in the long run. And if you plan to retire wealthy, you'll be in a high tax bracket and you'll pay high taxes on your IRA withdrawals at that time. So to me, it's like, wait, real estate, if you're earning passive income from real estate and you're doing, you know, cost segregation studies to accelerate depreciation and things like that, you're not paying any tax now and you're not paying it in the future either. And you can use that money now. So why lock it up until you're 65? That's sort of been the light bulb I've had, is there are ways to be very tax efficient, to pay low or even no tax through real estate completely legally. And you don't have to wait till you're 65 to do it. You can control your own money and destiny and life, you know, that way. So that's my little spiel on retirement accounts, is if you're getting matching money, I would definitely take advantage of that. I mean, it's hard to beat a 50 or 100% return if your company is matching your contributions. I mean, I still match because our state does a little bit of matching for children's education funds. And I'm like, yeah, can't beat a 50% guaranteed annual return on my contributions. I mean, that's just, I'd be silly to think that I'm better than that. That would be arrogant, you know, but to just put it in there because you think you should, because society teaches you, you should, I don't agree with. I completely agree that you should save for retirement, but I see my, you know, liquid real estate holdings as my retirement savings. I trust them a lot more than I do Social Security. As a millennial, as a, you know, younger person, I think most of us are pretty leery of what the government's really going to have for us when we retire and how much that'll, you know, give us. And even now, most people, if you had a middle-class life and you're getting Social Security payments, you're not like partying all the time and traveling to Europe and, you know, having a wild time. You're getting, you know, $2,000 to $5,000 a month to just kind of get by. It's not living high on the hog.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's such an important topic that you're bringing up about, you know, people talk about tax advantaged retirement accounts all the time, you know, all the time. And it's, I haven't been funding my retirement accounts either in recent years. Because I'm
good for you, Sina. Good for you. You take the trap.
You know, I'm investing in real estate, right? And but I love what you're doing with this kind of double. It's like not double dipping. Well, you're kind of being able to double dip, right? Like invest in brokerage account, but then and still be able to use that as like liquid assets to guarantee your real estate purchases, but then also being able to take a loan against it and put that money to use somewhere else with just paying like that 3-4 interest rate that you're talking about. So, I mean, that sounds pretty darn attractive. So thanks for taking the time to go into that. And, you know, before we hop off, I also wanted you to talk about, this is another thing that we need to kind of flip on our head, which is this idea of what's actually risky, right? And we touched on it before, is this people think of real estate as an alternative investment and like riskier sometimes is the implication than, you know, stock market investing. Can you tell me a little bit about where you're at on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think things that are real are inherently less risky than what I would refer to as paper assets, you know, which stocks are one of them, or they're electronic at this point. They used to be paper. Those can all go away. And historically, you know, every 50, 100, couple hundred years, I mean, there are massive crashes where there are government overthrows or regime changes or all kinds of things that can make what people thought was savings and secure go up in smoke. And anything that's not tangible, like gold, silver, real estate, food, et cetera, you know, in a crisis, it might not be there for you. Even in March of 2020, you know, there were not everyone was getting what they wanted, you know, physically too. So to me, the tangibility of real estate is really significant. The fact that, you know, if you take a single family home in a decently populated, diverse area. That is an asset that is just not going to go to zero. There's very little ways to make that go to zero. If it burns down, you've had to have insurance. You know, if you took out a loan to buy it, which most of us do, and you should have insurance no matter what. So, you know, your stock doesn't have that insurance. If your Enron stock goes to zero, no one is going to be there to bail you out. You know, like the FDIC will protect your money in a bank account. So that's something in theory, if the government honors that, which we think they will, it's a funded process. But even so, there's what's called counterparty risk, you know, where you are relying on a counterparty to bail you out, to do what they say they will do. And sometimes when those contracts hit the fan, you know, when Lehman Brothers was going under, you know, they weren't going under for lack of assets. They were going under because nobody trusted them and they wouldn't honor, you know, the contracts with them that they had had. And it all, you know, it turned out to be a house of cards. It was highly overleveraged. So I think real estate, you can use good debt, which means that what you're buying with it will pay you much more than what you owe on the debt, you know, and that it's a net gain. I think it's something that you can use productively. And we're all taught to be scared of debt and never be in debt. And Dave Ramsey is going to beat you over the head with a stick if you ever get in debt. But, you know, any business in America, most all of them use debt productively. And it's not dangerous if they issue bonds or issue stock. Or, and when we real estate investors, you know, borrow to buy assets, we're doing it because those assets are going to pay us more than what we're borrowing. And as long as you stick to what you know and what you can control, I think you'll be, you know, well advised to learn about real estate and take the plunge.
Awesome. Dave, well, that was a wonderful sort of summing up of that sort of topic. Thank you so much for coming on the show. There's been so much value that you've delivered. I'm sure the listeners are going to just love it. And I can't wait to have you on next time because we have a lot more to talk about with, you know, your sustainable investing and green investing and your sort of social projects that are related to real estate. So I can't wait to get into that next time. Thank you so much. Will you take a minute to tell the listeners how to get a hold of you and anything else you want to share?
Absolutely. So I always give out my personal cell phone on shows and I get like one call. So it's 207-517-5700. Give me a shout. Happy to chat. If I don't answer, I'll call you back. And I have two websites, Holman Homes, HOLMANHOMES is my syndication investing site. And then Katahdin Property Management is our management company in Maine. So be happy to chat with anyone that's looking to invest in our great state or come in here, and hope you all have a great day.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Dave. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.